football on Off the Ball.
Private equity has been buying stakes in leagues for a while, and it always works really nicely for private equity.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.
Well, hi there and welcome along to the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill. I'm Tom Malone, and on this week of all weeks, I am joined by Galway's own Johnny Ward, who is, I think, on site in Galway. How are you?
I'm actually in Dingle. There we go. Yeah, I was on site for our roadshow show, which we did on Tuesday, which seems like quite a while ago now. So we had JD and myself, Conor O'Dwyer, Barry Geraghty, and one Joe Canning in Mary Mullins in Galway, and it was great timing, Tom, because it was on at about 2 o'clock, and you know, you had plenty of time to kind of get ready for the races. I'd like to thank everyone who came along, and I know there are quite a few from the Shamrock Thoroughbreds who were there. We really appreciated them, and it was lovely to see, like, Conor O'Dwyer. My nap of the day was running the last race, and he was done basically in the last 100 yards by Conor O'Dwyer. And I was
going to ask about Lady Arwen. Did that come up?
Yeah. Conor gave her a good mention. I was obviously conscious that she might miss the break, but she was in good nick going there. Conor's horses were in good form. And I was coming out of the hotel that was so nicely organised by Brona Davies the following morning. Who did I meet in the little lift, looking and certainly feeling rather dishevelled in my case, but the owners of Lady Arwen, who were delighted with life. And that's what Galway is about. It's just like meeting people. And honestly, Tom, like the Tuesday was just, it made me remember why I love going racing, particularly at Galway. It's just the social aspect of the amount of people you met. Even Conor Mortimer, the former Mayo footballer, remember bumping into him well after racing and giving him an aggressive hug to congratulate Mayo on the All-Ireland. And that was a brilliant day out, and I hope everyone who went on Tuesday enjoyed it.
Yeah, and just like, it's been a good week, hasn't it? I suppose we're talking about the people of the week, and Mayo aside, and maybe there was a thinking that maybe Mayo had stolen some of Galway Race's thunder, but it still seems to have been a brilliant few days. It's been a brilliant few days for one young jockey in the shape of Dan King. On my notes, I have Dan King and King Tony Martin, but what a week it's been for that young man. And the one thing, Johnny, that has struck me, obviously his performances are excellent, but the praise he's garnered afterwards from people I'd regard as absolute judges, the likes of Tony Martin, Dennis Hogan, obviously Willie Mullins, just so effusive about that man's talent.
Well, I have to say now, Dennis Hogan and Tony Martin have been on about Conor King for quite some time. And if I'm doing the circuit around the country, and I'm often at the smaller meetings, Tony Martin has been really raving about this guy, as has Dennis Hogan. It's funny you mentioned the two of them, because obviously Tony has been using him a lot. And I think Dennis Hogan was saying, you know, I can't figure out how he hasn't been snapped up by a bigger yard. I can't remember when that was. That's several months ago now at this stage. But Conor comes from a very good family. His dad would have effectively sourced the two horses. Daniel comes from a very good family, but Conor, his brother, who trains, they've Oscar's brother, and they've two horses, and the other horse is a good horse as well, and I think their father would have sourced them. He's a fellow with strong Galway roots himself, so it would have meant a lot to him. I was a massive fan of Conor King as a rider on the flat. Now, Wake got the better of him, but Daniel has he just seems very grounded as well. He goes out with Jessica Stokes, who herself is kind of an aspiring point-to-point rider, I think. I was talking to Jessica's dad during the week in Wexford, was it last week, and Jessica was leading the horse around, and they kind of had a fancied horse, but it was a nice kind of family thing there as well, because Jessica and Daniel are going out, and there could be a couple now that you'll see a lot more at the races, because I think she wants to go point to point riding, and this guy obviously could go to the top. And as you say, Tom, it was you know, Daniel was magnificent in winning the two races. These are really, really difficult challenges for a jockey to win on horses that weren't like mad fancy. They were relatively fancied or whatever. I have to give Tony Martin massive credit for putting a pound in the jar, because I was at that horse's, I think his first win over hurdles was a fairly ordinary down Royal Maiden hurdle. And one of the sad aspects of that race was it was Michael O'Sullivan's last winner, and I interviewed Michael afterwards. I think he was talking about, you know, the challenges of going freelance. But it got me thinking that Michael might have been a story in relation to this horse, because I think Tony Martin was a fan of him as well. But he's owned by a neighbour of mine, Ray Graham. Ray Graham's dad would have sold land to my father in the early 90s. And I remember that well. And I remember Glen Cairn Construction, that he was the business he was involved in construction, is an amalgamation of Glen Namadie and Kilcairn, where I would have spent a lot of my youth because my mother's from Glen Namadie. So I was kind of aware of the Graham family, and his brother is one of the most high-profile senior councils in Ireland. So they're quite high-achieving family. But when this horse won in Down Royal, I sort of always said I'd follow him. I tipped him up a few times when he looked like he was kind of okay. But the win from Bellewstown, Tom, from that win, when, you know, to win the Galway Hurdle was a massive jump. And Tony Martin's training performance for me deserves huge, huge plaudits, because he trained this horse to be absolutely right to win the Galway Hurdle. You need a bit of luck in running, but the horse was so, so sweet. It was far, far better than Anthony produced. And, you know, I was pointing out before the race, this is a race that's probably been kinder to him than any, you know, Tudor City, and winning it twice to name. Has he won it five times now this century, whatever, but or four or five times. But I thought it was a brilliant training performance.
Yeah, it was out of this world. And one of the things that struck me afterwards as well, because when you think about the performance of Orlandi on Monday night as well, and he was talking about, you know, Robbie got into a little bit of trouble, and he was, oh, geez, I hope he won plenty. I was hoping to get into a bit of more trouble. And then I was like, my God, Pound and Jar's won way too far for Tony's liking here. I mean, he probably has nearly something else on the cards. But look, Galway Hurdles are the sort of be-all and end-all very much for Tony's operation. And to land two big Galway pots from, like, let's not, like, he's a relatively small trainer these days. He certainly doesn't have the numbers he would have had in sort of the mid to late 2000s. And, like, he is battling with scraps. So to put in those kind of performances with the ammunition he has is just, it really is excellent.
Yeah, so just to clarify, it was five winners: Thomas Edison, Quick Jack, Tudor City winning it twice, and Put a Pound in a Jar. That's all since 2014, Tom. So that's 13 renewals. Now, when I was getting into racing, Tony Martin was probably, I suppose, considered the way the bookies might fear Charles Burns in recent years. That would have been Tony Martin in those times. And I think Tony Martin's gambles were more conventional than Charles as well, put it that way. But there were, you know, Charles had this reputation of one the bookies would fear. And Tony Martin was very much like that. I got into racing around about 2003. And that was probably after the time of David's Lad, when he had these good horses. But like Dundura would have been an early horse I remember, who progressed from next to nothing. I remember him winning under Martin Mooney in a handicap hurdle over 2.5 at Navan off about 85 or 86, and going on then to win the Thiestes when Paul Carby got on him as a reserve, and then winning a race at Cheltenham under Ruby Walsh that the Irish didn't win for years after. But then he kind of, I don't know, was it changing yards or this or that? Like, he did have, like, you know, he probably isn't as feared the way he was, and didn't really have that standard of horse. And, you know, even allowing for his Galway Hurdle wins, he wouldn't have that many, like, handicap plots, I suppose, over jumps as in recent times. And one of the things that was said to me, Tom, was that he really likes his, you know, when I was speaking to him about Daniel King that time, he's, you know, he used to love Davy Russell, Carberry, Ruby, like these were his three goals, and Barry Geraghty as well. But he loved horses to be held up in races, to get into a rhythm. And when you look at the modus operandi of, say, the likes of a Henry de Bromhead trained horse these days under Rachel Blackmore until recently, ridden more forward. And there's definitely a school of thought now that if you're holding up horse in races, it's a lot harder to win because jockeys are savvy. A lot of races are tactical. And Put a Pound in a Jar wasn't quite ridden like that in the Galway Hurdle. Daniel got him into a rhythm. But he was sort of midfield, never really much worse than midfield. And it's just one of the interesting aspects about Tony Martin. I met a friend of mine, Mark Horrigan, who's Michael Horrigan's son. I met him at the Galway races, and he's back from Kuala Lumpur for a couple of weeks. But when I met him recently in Dublin, he was telling me how the family were just so taken by the fact that Michael's sister had passed away, and she had a long battle with illness, and she was at an advanced age, let's say in her 80s anyway, and they couldn't believe that Tony Martin came to the funeral, that Tony Martin went out of his way to go just because he knew Michael Horrigan from the races. And Mark was telling me that, speaking to people afterwards, it was like, that's what Tony Martin is like. You know, he'd been known as this kind of a bit of a character at the races, like, you know, and he'd be always trying to plot and here and there and all of that. But ultimately, a guy that has a lot of very, you know, decent traits in him and stuff like that, I think, should be mentioned. And to win two races like that at the Galway races, one on the flat, one National Hunt, with the quantity of quality that he has, is absolutely astounding. And he did me for right money. I backed the runner-up in the Galway Mile, but I certainly wouldn't begrudge him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think of the horse he had at the Curragh as well, and they punted it on the show. So he can still land a little touch every now and again. He's well able, but I just echo those words. He's great company. He's a great man. And like I said, if you send him a horse, he will find a race for it. That's the thing I find about him. You know, he'll figure the horse he loves, and that's the thing. I suppose in latter years he probably doesn't have those graded horses, so he has had to figure it out. But there's no better man to figure it out and come up with a plan. And it's one thing having a plan, it's another thing executing. He's proven he's done that. But let's move on quickly to Goodwood, because it's been phenomenal. And I suppose this week we've had a couple of coronations. Bo Echo in particular in the Sussex, and maybe as well Billy Lochnan. I often wondered what would happen to him on the back of that performance at Ascot, where by his own admission he didn't cover himself in glory. I suppose you probably spoke to him as well, but I actually asked this of Paddy Flood too, and he was like, look, I think Ascot will be the making of him as a rider and maybe Bo Echo as a horse. And as things transpired at Goodwood, that looked like it was the case.
Yeah, and you know, Stad emerged with even greater kind of plaudits, I would say, than he did at Royal Ascot. I thought it was a brilliant performance. Like, as much as the market was taken up so much by Boeco and Stad, like, these are taking on the older horses. It's not easy. Upper Ballow's rated 125. It was always going to be a race tactically that kind of was set up for Stad, really, with so much pace in it, to take Upper Ballow kind of out of his comfort area as well, but also to maybe trouble Boeco. Now, there are two school of thoughts here, and a good judge to me was talking to in Galway as well. He was saying after race, the horse got Billy out of jail. What I liked at Royal Ascot, Tom, was how humble Billy Lochnan was afterwards. And I think that's, maybe some jockeys thrive in self-confidence, all that. But for a young guy who, he looks like kind of Billy the Kid, smile on his face all the time, he took the race at Royal Ascot in the way, in my view, he should have, and admitted that the horse definitely got him out of jail. Like, he was really clinging on the closing stages. Goodwood is a very, very tricky course. A lot happens all of a sudden in the last sort of three furlongs. And the way this horse is ridden and the way he can be a small but keen, there was a fair chance he was going to find trouble. Now, I feel that Billy Lochnan had a lot of confidence in the horse. Ultimately, he won by half a length. I thought the turn of foot he showed was really astounding. Like, the position he was in, it was very, very difficult for him to get out of that position and ultimately win going away by a half a length and leaving the rest of them for dead. Like, 10 Bob Tony, 121 rated. These are good, solid horses that he left for dead. I love the fact that he's still unbeaten as well. This doesn't happen very often. Even See the Stars was beaten on debut. Frankel was unbeaten, but, like, it's very unusual for a horse that's tried in these races. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult to keep winning and to keep maintaining your form over the season. I feel Boyko is a somewhat generational talent. And it's kind of hard to know, Tom, as well, what trip he could be comfortable over, because I really wouldn't have any. He's by Knight of Thunder, but I wouldn't have much issue with him dropping back in trip as well.
Yeah, he is interesting, because the ITV crew seemed to suggest that he didn't look quite maybe as well as he has done in previous races, so they seem to be a little bit split in that. So, look, there is a chance that he's had a hard season. He could be. He probably might need just a week or two just to thrive off that. But his performances this year have been excellent. And, yeah, it was a real testament, I thought, to Billy Lochnan's maturity as a very, very young man to, take the criticism, basically draw the criticism out himself. And interesting as well, he said he wanted to play his cards as late as possible, and that's what he did, having said he watched back several renewals of the Sussex in the past and realised whoever finishes strongest wins. It's just not one of those tracks where you can get out in front and go. The other couple of horses to mention from the week in Goodwood, Scandinavia has undoubtedly been crowned the top stayer now. That was I suppose the loose horse helped him, because you kind of feel if it was just him and Trollerman, he just would have beaten Trollerman ahead again. Whereas the loose horse was there, you could go and ditch Trollerman and go and try and chase your man home.
Yeah, I met it's all these Galway memories now, but this race was kind of was on when we were just preparing, or we were in the middle of the show, give or take. And then just before I was coming into, just before I was coming into Galway, literally getting off the train, I met a well-known punter who relayed to me that he had been talking to Aidan O'Brien, and Aidan O'Brien had no concerns effectively about the stable form, basically was what he was saying, right? Because if, like, Scandinavia to be going off, like, he was available at 11 to 8, nearly 6 to 4 to win this race.
Yeah, he was huge.
How you wouldn't back him. And I just was worried. Like, I put up a couple of horses of Aidan's at Leopardstown that really flopped at odds on. And I just was a bit, I was a bit unsure. But this guy's performance at Royal Ascot, like, at most, he had one horse to deal with. What a performance by him. He's just exceptional. You heard MV Magna relaying what Ryan Moore said afterwards, effectively, that he's I think better than Kyprios is what he was saying, but he's, you know, by the standards of Scandinavia, who generally doesn't win by very far, and you speak about the loose horse, win by 8.5 lengths is astounding, and I'd actually love to see him try an arc or something like that. I'd love to see him go back and trip, because there's more to this horse than mere staying. This was an incredibly good performance to be Trotterman like that, and as I say, like, to see him in the arc, you know, he can think of horses like, was it Westerner ran very well in it?
Yeah, and they've done it with, like, the the Irish Ledger winner as well. Like, they have done it in the past where they've sent a stayer there. And, like, look, you know, you get a strongly run arc on softish ground. Like, it can bring a stayer into it if, you know, if maybe there isn't a top class horse in it, but it looks a decent renewal this year.
Yeah, I suppose he'll be pigeonholed as a National Hunt sire, but, like, This is a son of Justify who's a very, very good horse. Well, and say if you were to win the arc, like, that would open up the options that, you know, breeders would send a horse to him. If you have an arc winner, if you're an arc winner, you're probably good enough. And stayers can get good horses as well. He might be somewhat reliant on nice ground to be the thing which you wouldn't be sure about in the arc. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if he won the arc, to be honest. If they try that, obviously they'd have the option of the Cadran. But he just seems to be getting better as well. And he's only four. As a stayer, he's quite likely race, but for a horse who doesn't win by very far, I was astounded he could do it like that.
Yeah, that was the thing. Diamond Necklace as well, she's another one. I mean, you talk about Aidan O'Brien's strike rate, what, dropped to 9% or something like that, as well as brings him into the realms of mere mortals. But look, Diamond Necklace, she's gone and bounced on. Man's Best Friend was very impressive too, but Diamond Necklace is one of these ones that's almost kind of under the radar a little bit. Just, I suppose maybe she's a bit like someone like Simarx Basilica, who we didn't see very often, or didn't see in Ireland at least until later on the season, but she was breathtaking, wasn't she?
Yeah, just keeps on winning, and you say, like her daddy, say Mark's Basilica, and probably a backable enough price at 4-6, and yeah, like what's the ceiling for her in terms of distance and what she might do as well as a racehorse? I don't know what the answer to that is, and it is mad when you think about it. Like, I've never remembered Aidan O'Brien really being out of form. Like, some years he wouldn't really have the standard of horse, but he fairly put that to bed. And the 2-year-old you mentioned, Tom, whose name escapes me, that's the No Name Ever horse. Man's Best Friend, yeah, I thought he was exceptionally good.
He's real under the radar as well. Like, he didn't arrive there where we're going, oh, this fella's a classic horse. He was just like, almost, I don't want to say a box filler, but he's just another horse they brought over, but, you know, because there's group races there. And then now we're talking to him going, oh, yeah, no, this fella's a good point of horse.
Very, very, very much so. Like, I don't think it's a race that Aidan targeted that much. You know, he'd won the previous day at Naas, but there wasn't an awful lot of talk about him. Aidan has an awful lot of No Name Evers. They're kind of, you know, you expect him to have, like, one in the Queen Mary, maybe one in the Coventry nearly year on year. I don't know, like, No Name Ever has, you know, he's struggled to get classic winners, and maybe a lot of the horses haven't quite become what we thought they would be. So, he generally seems to get very good, powerful horses, and Man's Best Friend seems to be that. The trouble this horse got now, I put him up on Racing TV, I think he was 17 to 2, but it was hard to see him winning the trouble that he got. I thought Ryan Moore was very good in him because he seemed to go a good pace. At Naas, he was more or less up in front and he went hard and nobody could keep up with him. But here, he just got him into a position where he was comfortable. Don't underestimate the trouble this horse found. Usually you're not going to win a race like that. And he won by a length going away. So if this horse stays a mile, he's proper exciting next year.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. See, right, we'll move on to this weekend. Where do you want to start, Galway or Goodwood?
Might start with Goodwood, actually.
Stewart's Cup.
But I leave that up to you.
Let's go with the Stewart's Cup. I think it's an interest, as always, it's an interesting race. It's absolutely impossible. You're talking about sort of 6-7-1 the field. Far above Dream there was obviously fourth in the, having been unbeaten at the start of the season, then fourth at Royal Ascot, kind of topping the market. But again, it's interesting. I kind of thought Sondat had a squeak given the way. Obviously, won well in the curve, but won his own side in Royal Ascot as well, which probably maybe inflates his price. Look, has a £6 penalty, but totally wide open race.
Yeah, and I just looking at the specials here from the bookmaker. I mean, this is the type of race if you're having a bet, you should probably keep it quite small. I'm a bit like that with the big handicaps over jumps as well. I think you're better value in the smaller races. But if you're having a bet here with William Hill, the place odds are, yeah, 5 places a fifth, so that's not too bad. So if you're having a bet each way, if you're having a bet, I would have it each way. Very, very open, Tom. My pin landed on a horse that will be, let me see what price he is here. Jamie Spencer is riding Tribal Chief. It was a horse by Sioux Nation. So he's run the last day behind Indalo at Sandown. That was the Coral Challenge handicap. He's kind of a typical Spencer ride. Spencer hasn't ridden him before, but he's probably one that will want to come from off the pace. He ran the Victoria Cup at Ascot early in the season when he was third, and that was under that man Billy Lucknan. He's by a horse I'm a big fan of, Sioux Nation, and probably can run well in this. I'd hope he won at Goodwood last season when he won the Virgin Bet, a good bet handicap, and it's probably putting your hopes in, and it is going to be a fun watch. If Jamie Spencer rides, was sixth in the race last year, but he will definitely need a bit of luck in running. Hawksbill has a chance as well, I would have thought, and I suppose disappointed to see maybe a lack of Irish runners, but that's a reflection of how difficult the race is. Ryan Moore rides Mignola Bay, but yeah, it's a very tricky race.
And then just the Lily Langtry is really interesting, the Group 2 on Saturday at Goodwood, goes to post at 3:00. You have like Amelia Earhart here coming up in trip. You got that Wardo was actually beaten last time out, but behind a Strange who's obviously just progressed massively. She's now a Group 1 horse, but even though it's a relatively small field, I am fascinated to see Amelia Earhart go up in trip, fifth in the Irish Oaks last time out.
Yeah, she's probably been, I think, you know, her limitations have been a bit exposed at this stage. Amelia Earhart, she was probably a bad favourite for me in the Oaks. I wasn't that surprised that she was kind of found out a bit. I think the last day maybe, Tom, that was probably a bit more like her true running, and I suppose ultimately she wasn't good enough on the day. Even though she's by Camelot, which, you know, Camelot stayed very well, you're kind of looking at the way she finishes her race, and you're thinking, is she crying out for this sort of test? And I'm just disappointed there isn't one more runner, maybe two in it, because I do feel Goody Two Shoes has reasonable claims. She was third in this race last year. Now she was safely enough held at the line behind Werda, who obviously reopposes and is favourite. But, you know, she was a 4-1 chance then. She's around about 10-1 now. I put her up strongly at Fairy House the last day. I couldn't believe the price she went off. Now, she was beaten, but I thought she did a lot right in that race. And she's obviously probably going to be aimed again at going back to the Melbourne Cup, which she was in a magnificent second last year. But she's in good nick, this horse. I wouldn't make her the price she is. I feel she... she'll have a reasonable chance, for all that she probably needs others to disappoint. Amelia Earhart, for me, she definitely worth a shot at this. I wouldn't be overly confident.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Right, let's move on to Galway. The handicap hurdle, the listed handicap hurdle at 12 minutes past 3 on Saturday is, again, quality. You've got the likes of, you know, American Mike in here, Bunting, Comfort Zone, so many sort of familiar names. You know, you're kind of looking at maybe Comfort Zone top in the market there. You got the like Manella Diamond with squeaks as well. Comfort Zone, Sir Galahad rather, Manella Diamond, all up near the top of the market. Another one of these kind of coy where you're like, where do you start when dissecting one of these kind of races?
You're looking for the winner, really, but you call it.
That's the end point.
But like, it's the start and the end, to be philosophical on it. You know, you're basically looking to end up where you started off in terms of your pursuit, which is maybe comfort zone on the basis of his win the other night. It was a great performance to win. It was one of these races I was kind of glad I didn't have a strong opinion on, because I wouldn't have picked comfort zone, I have to say. Probably didn't stay at Royal Ascot. But whether he'll back this up, I'm not 100% sure. You look at Danny Donadoni. Like, Danny Donadoni, the last time he ran the handicap hurdle, he was 20-1 under Anne McGuinness. So I'm not sure he's achieved enough since to be an awful lot shorter here. But he is quite lightly raced and trained by Willie Mullen. So I think he has some positives. Grand's Boys, owned by some friends of mine, the Napa Racing Syndicate, would have a chance as well. He's kind of been running okay at times in these handicaps. Kiltealy Park, Paul Nolan, so agonising the denied history is written by the winners with a quirky horse in the Galway Plate. Kiltealy Park, another walk in the park. He'd have a bit of a squeak. He beat Danny Donadoni the last day, and obviously as is better off with the weights. I found this very tough, Tom. I'd probably go with Danny Donadoni off 128. I'm not sure what price he will be, but he's quite trip versatile. He should get into a bit of a rhythm, travel well the last time he went over this similar trip.
Yeah, I kind of like the chance of burning ability there. Obviously, Yard is in form, touched off at Bellystown last time out, but it's kind of like any horses run before Galway, you kind of have to have in the back of your mind that they're really... don't have an eye on that day, and they do have an eye on the sort of following day. Elsewhere,
Owen McCarthy. Owen McCarthy obviously
won
the
winner,
yesterday. Yeah, and he thinks plenty of him. I'm trying to think now. Was I racing at Listowel the day he won in late May? But I know he's a horse that he thinks plenty of, and to sneak in here as the bottom getting in of 118, Gary Noonan riding high, you know, I thought Shadow Paddy was well beaten coming out of the dip, and congratulations to TJ Ryan and all the characters involved in that. But Burning Ability definitely has a chance.
Yeah, just thoughts, and we'll move on to the Ardlon Hotel Handicap. You got Sanair. Look, as happens over the course of the week, you get horses going back in again. Will you go back in on Sanair?
Yeah, Sanair was declared. Like, this is the beauty of Galway if you have the right type of horse. Sanair was actually declared to run last night, and I was against Sanair last night on the basis that it was too high a grade of race. Like, I think it was maybe not... 85, whereas this is back to 0-70, and this is the reason I tipped Sanair. I'd like to see the prices, Tom, to be honest, because I didn't think much went wrong for Sanair the other night. I was surprised at how well the winner, given that she missed the break, won. But there are very interesting horses in this, and the 15 runner handicap aspect makes it probably a win bet race. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if Sanair won. But a horse that interests me is Apache Outlaw as well. I just feel Edo might have aimed him at this. He's a horse that I used to really like on the all-weather. Would absolutely be reliant on the ground, be nice, but I think it will be. And he's creeping into, I imagine for the first time in his life, a 0-70. So keep an eye out for him. Edo is absolutely diamond around Galway. Like, he's just brilliant in these handicaps. And I'd be interested in him at the prices with a saver on Sanair.
Are we to have a bit of a dry weekend? That RT in particular actually very critical of the going at Galway, the going description at Galway. Ruby and Jane had a bit of a cut now, and obviously immediately after Harry Cobden won his race, his comment was, well, in England we'd call it soft. So it is, I don't know how trainers feel about it, but obviously look, once they get those two big races out of the way, they're probably less worried, but there's certainly a bit of pressure on them to make sure they've obviously good safe summer jumping ground. But It's a tricky balance, isn't it, at this time of the year, the way the weather's been, and then we got a couple of kind of wet evenings on Monday and Tuesday as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like I don't know. It's almost like an impossible argument. But I do feel at the moment, and I've spoken to quite a few clerks of the course, including Shane Ryder, who's looking after Galway. I do think since Michael O'Sullivan passed away. Michael passed away at a time when, you know, there shouldn't have been any issue with it, but that's just the way that's the way life is now. You're getting erratic weather, and the ground at that stage was you know, in Thurles was faster than you'd expect that time of year. And I think since then, you know, clerks of the course are probably very they're afraid of having any sort of similar scenario where a jockey gets injured on ground that might be deemed sort of too quick.
Were you talking to Shark about this? Sorry, was Shark talking to you about this on Racing TV? Or was that he was just kind of critical of general not getting summer jumping ground?
Yeah, and with respect to Shark, who's become some sort of an unofficial, you know, spokesperson for summer terrain, he's not alone in this. Like, two trainers came up to me at... Killarney. And basically, there's a perception in Ireland now, and I don't think it's far wrong, that you're not going to get summer you're not going to get summer jumping ground at all, basically. So you have to, if you want to run your horse in the summer, he's a summer jumper, she's a summer jumper, you have to go to England. I don't know if that's, you know, Shark has sent a load of horses to England, to Britain this season, probably partly because his son Paddy's riding over there. But I'd say partly because, like, you've a trainer on to me who made a 6 or 7 hour journey down to Killarney, the ground is gone. The ground is gone because of watering.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side of that, from the last time the watering takes place to the bumper, we'll say, or the last race on the card, and the drying that there was in Killarney that day when it was, I think it was windy, but it was certainly hot. There's obviously, it's very, very challenging. And in the horrors of this apocalyptic climate scenario that we're, you know, coming into now, the ground at a racetrack is neither here nor there. But for the context of this show, I do feel it's a serious problem for trainers. If you have an owner who's paying you all this money, could be $2,000 a month, you spend another 700 or 800 quid going down to a race meeting and maybe a grand all in for everything, and the ground is gone for you, and this is a horse that hasn't been right. I feel that they are probably going too much on the side of overwatering at the moment. That's a personal opinion. It's definitely shared by others, but not everyone. And I've absolutely no way would I want to be a clerk of the course, be involved in this, because it's impossible.
Yeah, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, no matter what way. Is there anything else standing out for you, sorry, on that Saturday Galway card before we move on to the Athenora?
Just a quick look at Saturday as I get up here. I did mean to say as well, Tom, just not to be remiss of me, not to mention Robbie Colgan. Like, I spoke to Robbie Colgan lately when he had a winner at Roscommon, and I was bringing up to him about how, you know, he used to ride Royal County Star in the Troy Town for Tony Martin. I remembered him as this really kind of kind, you know, national hunt jockey, and like, that was a hell of a success for him. And obviously, if Put a Pound in a Jar runs again in the 2:37, keep an eye out for him. That'll be interesting. I Tony likes kind of running horses. I think he win twice with that filly a few years ago, and ran her three times at Galway. Maybe he will run Put a Pound in a Jar. Might be optimistic, but that's a good race, that 2:37, the Tribes Handicap Hurdle. Lips Freedom sneaking in for Andrew Connors, who has done really, really well, and Galway was the plan of 113, probably the one to beat if the favourite don't run.
Yeah, well, it's Robbie Colgan is just such a good guy, such an brilliant guy, and in a very weird twist of fate, I actually have a picture of him in my bedroom, because he rode a horse called Dante's Reef in the Irish Grand National, who was owned by my partner's late father. He finished fifth in the Irish Grand National back, I don't know, it was like 2011 or 2012. But the horse is still around. He's 31 years of age. He's still around. We're feeding him every day. So I still have Dante's, and still have a picture of Robbie Colgan on board as well, on the day he finished fifth in the Irish Grand National. And he was very well backed at 33-1, £7 out of the weights. And he plugged on home, and everyone was absolutely delighted as well with their takings.
Yeah, that's not something I was expecting to hear in the show. Robbie, you're in my bedroom.
But, there you go.
Yeah, no better man. He's just a quiet, nice, quiet guy. And I think that's, you know, Noel Mead spoke about this to Don McLean in a piece in the Times before Galway. He said Galway is a handicappers' meeting. And if you're not familiar with racing, you might not know what I mean there. But handicappers are basically the middle of the road horses, give or take. And Noel Mead's comment was, Galway is a meeting for handicappers, it's a meeting for the people. I hope it never changes, and I know exactly what he means.
Yeah, dead right. We got a few familiar faces in the Athenora, the likes of Dunham, who probably just too big an ask, first time out this season. Plenty of other familiar faces in there as well, and Pierre Royal as well, reopposing, who wasn't beaten far earlier on in the week, but definitely a horse who's still on an upward curve for Aidan McGuinness, it would seem. What do you make in this? What do you like in this?
Yeah, let me just quickly check how many of these actually ran the other. Could it be? I think it's 10 if you include the horse who is reserve. So I think we've 9 horses in this who ran in the Galway Mile. So, like, if you want to get into form study, maybe you won't get it right, because the likes of Aidan has thrown a curveball in here with Dorset, and there are a few others like Vaffertino coming over. But that, you know, obviously the Galway Mile is definitely going to be key to the race in some respect. So this is a fascinating challenge for you as a tipster or as a judge. If you're taking on a Randy, and there's reasons to, he's a terrible draw, he's dropping back in trip, and obviously was almost.
And he's really put two good runs together.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly, and like it's not easy back up. You know, generally horses are not run twice in a week, let alone in races as good as this. So do you oppose him or not? You mentioned Dunham. Dunham won the Galway Mile last year. It was one of the best rides I think I've ever seen around Galway by Jamie Heffernan.
I don't think he gets a mile either. Yeah, I think Seven Francis is his trip.
So he's going to be a horse here. He was 12-1 under Billy Lee in the Galway Mile. He's going to be a price here now on the basis of finishing so far down the field there. And I actually spoke to Gerry Keane before the Galway Mile. He was quite hopeful for Jenny an article. He was up at the pace and just faded out of it. But again, I wouldn't rule him out. I backed Pierre Royal heavily. It was my biggest bet of the week. I backed him each way, thankfully, at 5-1 on course. So, you know, at the end, I was kind of relieved that he was at least in the first four because, you know, he was quite well beaten at the line. But I'm not sure, Tom, if that much actually went wrong for him looking back today. I thought the race kind of went right for him. And at the end, he was just holding on for second. So I don't know. I find this tough. Gleneagle Bay is another horse who was sixth in the race. He's more than good enough to get involved. So I'm going to probably have to look at it a bit more. It's going to be a very difficult race to call. If Randy's in the same form and he gets a look and run, he'll be hard to beat. But from gate 18, £7 penalty, desperately tough renewal of the race. And as I say, Dorset adding a lot of intrigue as well.
Yeah, Dorset's a fascinating runner. Well, this is the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill, 18+. See gamblingcare.ie. Johnny, we have to bring up your charity bet. So you're next. What are you going, 50 on the nose or 25 each way? Or what are you? What way are you spreading it?
I'm going to go each way. I'm going to stick to Galway tomorrow in the... So Lips Freedom runs in the 237, 25 each way. It's probably competitive. There might be a rule four as well, just to note if you're back early with the put a pound in the jar in the race. But Lips Freedom each way for Andrew Connerns and Donna Myler, who's had great look around Galway in recent years.
Good stuff. Right, thanks for that, Johnny. And enjoy the West. Were you down in Dingle now?
Down in Dingle, yeah. I think it might be early for the Dingle Derby, but God, like, what a week of Irish tourism. Like, the Galway, the Galway races, and just the Sleighhead drive there. Now, they're a little bit quiet down here after last week. I think some Mayo people haven't left
the
boat.
No harm, Johnny, no harm.
Yeah. No harm, but, there's nowhere like the kingdom, to be fair, and the Dingle Derby is on the bucket list. I'm not sure I'll get it this week. And by the way, the people I spoke to, Tom, that did the 7 days, were planning to do the 7 days in Galway. You're made of far different stuff than me. Like, one night I wasn't right for 2 days after it.
No, that's a different kind of stamina. Maybe and if they brought in Croke Park as well into the mix, then that's just that they deserve an award. Anyway, Johnny, thanks so much for joining us. As always, I'll leave you to your sightseeing. And this has been the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with thanks to William Hill. So gamblingcare.ie, check it out, 18+. But we'll see you back here next week when I think it'll be Johnny and Johnny in the seat.
The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill, 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
Private Equity has been buying stakes in leagues for a while, and it always works really nicely for Private Equity.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.